from Tampa Bay Downs. A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 162 XM 207. Sports Zone 999 if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website, stevebeck.com. And happy to be over on the Gulf Coast. I'll tell you one thing. I've been coming here a while, and over 20 years. Tampa now has officially, and maybe even, the entire Gulf Coast infrastructure has reached the critical mass of traffic that they have over on the East Coast, over on the Treasure Coast. I'm telling you, it gets worse and worse and worse. I'm amazed, actually, and you can see the construction. It's everywhere, and I typically stay out by Tarpon Springs, and I could just tell by how long it used to be. About it used to be 25 to 30 minutes. Then it was like 35 to 40. Now it's just under an hour. It's like 14 miles to get here. So it's tough. And then you say, well, stay closer. Well, it wasn't so easy. There was pretty well sold out, and big downpour overnight. In fact, it woke me up. It was raining so hard, which is not unusual here. I've seen it before. In the meantime, the grass course could not be more beautiful. You're going to have to sit through the usual gushing about what a delightful place it is. Tampa Bay Downs and Mrs. Thayer and the whole team, Margot, and of course Jason Beam now, who now is institutional. I saw where he said it's going to be his sixth summer up at Colonial, and he's certainly been here right there, probably another year or two, right? So 7-8 years, whatever it is. We'll talk. I think if he doesn't stop by today, then we'll get Jason on Friday. But he's certainly gonna pop in here in what I'm christening the Marty McGee press box. and Marty would be shocked. And maybe they're doing it. Maybe they did it because Dave Groening is here. But they've installed a beautiful flat screen TV here in the press quarters. Yeah, and they never had this for Marty. I'll be sure to point that out to Dave. Dave's going to come in. Dave hasn't been here, he said, in 20-something years. So the rest of the building is nothing changes here. That's one of its charms, actually. There's no big infrastructure changes to Tampa Bay Downs. It's as sweet and charming as ever. So should have a terrific card pulled together today. They'll take entries, and we'll dig in tomorrow. And I didn't see where Dave. I didn't see any added names or any ins and outs. Other than those nine that we talked about yesterday that Dave had reported Sunday into Monday. So, all right, let's set the stage. It's Wednesday, so we've got a lot of our standard fare, including the Hong Kong. I did get Dick Powell's late pick three play up on the Twitter. So let's get it on. So I don't know how we did in the first leg, actually. I was kind of setting up and doing a few different things. Here we go. A little HK, a little Happy Valley. 9 minutes. We're only going to be able to take live the ninth race. Dick is going to join us a little late because you may have seen Pat McKenna nice enough to send up a send up a flare. Dave O'Rourke is going to join us in about 10 minutes. And, of course, the president and CEO of the New York Racing Association, who's been in the news. Naira, did you see? Yeah, Naira, there was a little bit of news the last 48 hours. Yeah. We'll talk to Dave about some of the back end work that has gone into this, design, what lies ahead, some of the timeline topics that some people I think have drawn a few conclusions, and that includes Breeders' Cup, and of course the Breeders' Cup made it very clear. In fact, Pat and I were talking yesterday as I was driving. The Breeders' Cup said point blank that they, as soon as Belmont is ready to receive a Breeders' Cup, it'll come back to New York. So the speculation I saw where people were thinking, oh, that means, we're going to get the Breeders' Cup in New York in 2026. I don't think it means that, because the way the timeline is set right now is to be ready September of 26 to have, the first full meet back with the building ready September 26. But that's a little bit too hairy to, to commit and lock in a Breeders' Cup for, October, November of that year. I would think that you're not going to see a Breeders' Cup at Belmont until 27. So there'll probably be an interim, probably be a Keeneland. Del Mar 2 years in a row, you would think maybe a Keeneland, for 26, and then Belmont, a spanking new Belmont Breeders' Cup in 27. That seems to make sense. Belmont 26, because I would, from everything, if you read between the lines, from everything they're saying, they really want to get back to Belmont as soon as possible with the stake. The speculation that a third Belmont at Saratoga, I could sort of read around it, but let's let Dave address that, all right? Plus, we'll also catch up on a few other things. One thing I've not had a chance to talk to Dave about is his involvement on the racetrack surfaces topic. So that'll be I'll slip that in. He's only got 15 minutes because he's got a meeting, but I did want to get Dave on all the myriad topics that have been in the news. All right. Sid, and I thought maybe Sid would come visit again and do a live visit, but he can't, so we'll do Sid by phone. You may have seen that Lewis Lee Hagan III, about as august a family in Lexington racing history as there's ever been, passed at the age of 88 yesterday, and looking, I think, at 10:30 for a visit to pay tribute. I mean, this is... You read through the history. From James Ben Ali Hagan to Hal Price Eadley, and the founding of Keeneland, and just basically everything. Hagan's father, Lewis Lee II, it's just synonymous with Keeneland. So hearts go out, and hoping for a visit, perhaps from Shannon Arvin. around 10:30. Later, we'll look up north to northern Kentucky and the Turfway action. And speaking of which, I don't know if you saw right now at DRF.com, there's a piece from Nicole Russo. We love when they set Nicole free and let her write about racing. She followed up on the Battaglia, and it's very interesting, actually. Brad Cox and his assistant were suggesting that Encino, instead of looking to the Ruby, Encino may make the, you know, get a dirt try in right away and try the Bluegrass. I mean, so every single week, these winners are turning their attention to the Bluegrass. Pretty wild, and that includes that included Gargana with Dornick. So the Bluegrass is looking, speaking of Keeneland, the Bluegrass is looking like a titanic battle with about as many of the top contenders arcing toward Derby as you could possibly want. So we'll see how the rest of it shapes up. Let me also slip in, speaking of Titanic, well, there's a segue. You obviously saw the extensive coverage yesterday of the news involving Heise and Haiwu dropping the University of Kentucky Equine Testing Laboratory as the university engages in a investigation involving Dr. Stanley, who is as respected a research veterinarian and academic veterinarian as you could find. I mean, years at Cal Davis. No one pending the results of the investigation. No one seems to want to say too much, but it sort of feels like some procedural errors and so forth. So in the meantime, Haiwu will send the samples that were being handled, Kentucky and Florida, it seems, will send them now to industrial in Colorado. And there obviously will be more. I mean, Dr. Stanley staying on and specifically working at Gluck. And he's working on, I know he's got that project involving, you know, genome or mapping, DNA mapping to create a baseline so that if there's variations off of it, be a way for anything that might have been introduced to a horse. So there'll be more on that. And actually, I've got some other Haiwu. Haiwu hijinks. We could do a segment. We'll get to that. I've got some of the results from yesterday, too, I want to slip in. Parks with those stakes. We'll get to that and more. All right? Let's get Dave. Timing is perfect, and I don't want to waste any of that time that we've got devoted. All right? And wading through a couple of messages. And Dave will bring us up to speed on everything everybody wants to know. First and foremost, though, we'll say good morning. Dave O'Rourke.
Hey, good morning.
Dave, I appreciate this, and certainly appreciative of the governor's office. This was kind of an update that you would expect from the racing organization, but the governor's so eager and excited about all this. I thought it was great that it came from there.
Yeah, Governor Hochul's been a great supporter of the sport. Since she's been in, and she's helped spearhead this project, and it's great for Nassau County, and we thank her, and like 20,000 to 30,000 employees in New York around horse racing as well.
Give everybody sort of the lead up and the framework of the design and what has gotten us to this point and the timeline, and you can help us help fans and horse players and everybody and stakeholders understand how everything's going to transpire.
This project, I've been with NYRA for about 16 years, and the downstate consolidation is not a new concept, obviously, and over the last 5 years, it really started to move forward in terms of what we want to do with the building. Would we retrofit what was there? Would we take it down and put up something new? It was a pretty, once you started looking at the numbers and what it would take, it was pretty straightforward that it really required a rebuild. And at that point, the last couple of years, Populous had come in, and we've gone through designs, and the design we have right in front of us, it looks modern. And it might be a little polarizing, but I think as we get into what the building, how it'll function and why certain decisions are made, like in terms of glass and, the building faces north and obviously it's towards the paddock. And when you're looking at, a modern green building, like how would you design it? And that'll really come to light as we get further and further explaining the functionality of the building with the public. There's a lot of cool concepts here. In this building, pretty much on each floor, front to back views of the paddock and the track. It's terraced on each side on almost every floor as well. So this is really going to be something cool for New York, and it's on its way. About 2 years.
And then before we talk about some timing and some of the major calendar events and how they might. How the timing affects them. A couple of things about the design and the utility, because one thing, Dave, that I think people are forgetting, Andy brought this up yesterday, and he made a fabulous point about the infield. I mean, people are talking about the smaller building, siding, so sort of an UBS. So there's like a whole another space to be utilized there, and then there's however the infield is going to be employed. So there's a lot going on here that is going to be new to people.
Yeah, I think the green space is going up 5x from roughly 6 acres to about 30-32. Grandstand area, that's about 4.5 acres to be cleared out. Now, that'll be used a lot for overlay when we scale up for big events. There'll be a high-end tenting there, and it's going to be set up with all the infrastructure, so that will go smooth. The infield, you're looking at 25 acres or so of usable space. It's massive. It's going to be an asset for big days, but also off days for community use. And then the backyard, and it's not evident when you're looking at the renderings, really. A lot of questions about the tree. That tree is actually 50 feet or so behind the paddock. So there's a lot of space being opened up even in the backyard itself because the building's a lot narrower and it's kind of moving forward, in a sense, that whole compound with the paddock towards the rail. So, there's going to be a lot of green space, a lot of opportunity for functions during racing and outside of racing, and also for community access. Nassau County, there's really not any big parks in that area, and we're really creating one right here.
Let's address the tree since you mentioned the tree. For those that don't really get up close to it, the tree is being held together by literally stanchions and pulleys and. The tree has been in rough shape for a long time. Explain to people you know, what's going to go into, you know, protecting it essentially?
Yeah, we're bringing in experts because there's a lot of trees back there that have history. So as part of this, we're bringing in outside experts on what can we do to, you know, protect trees that are near areas that are going to be disturbed. This one's kind of further back, but it is in a, as you said, in a fragile state. There's a lot of metal wire really kind of helping it support its limbs because I guess they get heavy in that type of trees. It's about, I've heard estimates of like 200 years old. So we do everything we can to preserve it. It's not going to be in an active area, so you know, our hopes are high that it'll be fine.
It's the Hyman Roth of trees. Dave,
it's a little bit more of a Glenn Kozak question, but he's on it.
All right, I know that. I know that all of America's finest tree experts will be part of this decision and taking care of it. I talk about the design, and for those that don't know Populous, it's come up quite often because Alan Forman, of course, and the people in Maryland are working with Populous, and they really are the go-to design team for the modernization or for the rebuilds. I mean, things like Ascot and Longchamp and virtually every other new racetrack in the world they've worked on. So they've got a unique knowledge of how to employ space. And, you know, then in terms of the modern aspect of it, you do have somebody on the board in Mark Holliday who's a builder who builds towers and builds modern, you know, modern buildings. So it feels like, you know, you the direction you ended up in is pretty understandable.
Yeah, with the leadership of Mark, I mean, he's obviously one of the biggest builders in New York of his generation with One Vanderbilt, One Madison. So, you know, his advice and his guidance in this process, this is a design that people are going to love or hate at first, but I think once you start to use the building and start to understand why certain decisions were made, it's going to completely transform the experience at Belmont Park. Like, you know, Belmont Park had some beautiful angles on it, but there was a lot of things about it. It likely happened over time where the south-facing part of the building, like pretty much all those windows got cut off over time with either office build-outs or whatnot, and that prevented the light getting into the building. And as you would know, you go to Belmont, and it was colder inside than outside.
Yep. Yep.
And these are things, and if you're at Belmont, one of the things that always kind of bothered me, and I don't know why it was decided at the time, there's these beautiful balconies that were over the paddock. Those were connected to offices. So there's a lot of things about this that that were made for the customer. You know, in terms of the player, there's one floor on the second. It's on the second floor. It's called the Paddock Club. And it's really a big room that has front-to-back views of the track and paddock. And for us, like, that's kind of like the everyday spot to hang out. So it's been thought through from how do we operate it in the middle of the winter when we don't want maybe the whole building open to what do we do to an event day with, you know, 50 to 100,000 people if we want it because of the infield. So there's been a lot of thought put in this, and it's still evolving. You know, the shell of it isn't really changing, but, like, the components, we're getting adjusted as we do flow-throughs. Future too. And that kind of harks back a little bit to the old Belmont, the one before the last one, where they actually had bleachers on the roof. And we didn't go that far. But the top floor of this, the majority of it, is an open floor deck. So there's going to be a lot of things about this building that I think people are really going to grasp onto and love.
Well, from a design standpoint, somebody, you know, took some art and architecture. It's stunning and unbelievably exciting. Let's talk about the timing and what this means for 2026. We'll circle back to the situation at Saratoga in a little bit. But Dave, will the if everything works on the timing as suggested, Will there be a Belmont Stakes at Belmont with the building not yet complete? That's question one. And then, of course, question two, you know, speculation from early on with Breeders' Cup was they said that when there's a new heated Belmont and a new Belmont, we're coming back to New York. Could they come back as early as 2026?
With the first one right now, the timeline is to have the building majorly completed by 26, to have that Belmont there. So the plan is to have the Belmont in June of 26 at that current site. Some of the interior finishes might not be ready. We might not have a floor or two, but that's tagged to happen. In terms of the Breeders' Cup, we're in conversations with them now. We can't answer for them coming in 26. We'd love them to. But we're definitely set to get into the rotation. Was there another question, or is it?
No, that was it. Belmont and Breeders' Cup in 26 are the two that are the obvious. You know, because if September of 26 is earmarked as the official opening of the building and the first full meet and so forth with the building complete, I mean, that's fairly tight up against, if there's any delays or anything that holds the project back. You know what I mean?
There's always force majeure, but right now everything fits with the schedule with contingency baked in, so we should be good.
Outstanding. Let me then get back to other parts of what's going to go on between now and 2026. The Belmont at Saratoga, Dave, sold out in minutes and then in days, essentially. The excitement is through the roof upstate. The other elements everything that has been associated with it, and that includes the numbers that came out of the American Horse Council economic impact study, then the numbers that were suggested, between not just this project, but people should realize, too, that at Aqueduct, Resorts World is investing $5 billion into, what will be an aqueduct park for the long term. And that's only possible because of what's happening at Belmont. So this is all a cohesive, active economic driver.
Yeah, it is. Because by exiting Aqueduct, we're leasing up over 100 acres for development. And you can see that in the Resorts World proposal. So this was a very smart investment by the state. And now by redoing Belmont Park, we've got a year-round facility. We secured for not only the Belmont Stakes, which is an international event, but to bring the Breeders' Cup in. And it opens up the entire campus to work with UBS on other aspects with that park. The Islanders actually had a pretty cool thing going on this winter with skating in our backyard. So if you start looking at that and think about expanding that out and what could be done on a year-round basis, Belmont's going to be amazing, and then Aqueduct's got future potential for development. So this, economically, was a home run.
Now, that economic impact number, $3 billion and employment of 20,000 in New York, that coming out of the American Horse Council report. Dave, I want to also, first chance that you and I have had to talk since your inclusion, more than inclusion, in the Surfaces Committee that has come together for HISA. Some thoughts about kind of a revisit here, 6 months removed from everybody trying to examine and speculate about surfaces in American racing.
Yeah, and we're still putting this together in terms of the research report, but what you're seeing is rains definitely have an impact, especially when you have significant amounts over a significant period of time. But on the same time, if you look at the data over the last several years, there's been a lot of progress made in terms of the safety on dirt with the maintenance as well. So I think a lot of what you're pointing to is having the access, and I'll just use the term access, to three surfaces, whether it's for training, whether it's for when you're off the turf. I mean, that's the direction that I'm seeing there. And it's really something we've decided to do with Belmont before we really got into this, but there's more verification that approach is probably a good one, specifically when you're in a temperate climate. You know, it's a different story if you're racing in an extremely dry climate, where you don't have the factor of rain, you control the water better. So for us, like, you know, this isn't done. This is going to be an evolving process. It also comes into the suppliers for synthetics, the research going into synthetics, and the same thing for dirt and the construction of tracks as people invest. Like, we're investing in all new racing surfaces at Belmont. I think you're going to see something similar going on at Pimlico. So I think this is good. I think the timing's good and the group. And, you know, that information will start to come out over the next several months. I don't think there's anything shocking to anyone in terms of the data. It's just, you know, what do we have? What have we done? What can we do in terms of preventative with bets? And then what can we do in terms of adoption of technology, whether it's trackers during training even, or actual surface construction and maintenance?
Well, I look forward to that. I did want to slip it in as part of the visit. Dave O'Rourke joining us to not just get informed about the new Belmont Park, but really to kind of celebrate what was a long time coming, and one of those things, Dave, that some people, you know, just refuse to believe would ever happen, you know, that all the plans and all the hopes, for everything in terms of how, you know, how the association would operate and its future, very, very tangible with the release of this update and, you know, these renderings.
No, we're excited. The industry is excited, and this is going to be, we're going to get this done in the next 2 years, and then we're going to have one heck of an opening in 26 with that Belmont, and we'll move forward from there.
I appreciate the opportunity to talk, and looking forward now really to getting upstate. That's the next big, you know, there's going to be all these checkpoints along the way, and the next one will be the first of two Belmont Stakes at Saratoga.
Yeah, so yeah, we're going to have a nice distraction over the next 2 years, because that's going to be one heck of an event. That's going to be fun.
Sometimes we, you know, tongue in cheek say, oh, you know, people are stopping me in the grocery store. In fact, people have stopped me at Hannaford in Greenwich to talk about it. It's amazing how excited people are. So everything's in place, and everything's in place for a new Belmont Park come 2026. Dave O'Rourke, as always, I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Dave O'Rourke, folks, and the plans, which could include a 2026 Breeders' Cup, possibly, and will seem to feature a 2026 Belmont at Belmont, even with the building only, you know, getting close to, you know, June, July, August, September. So it would be, you know, another 60 to 90 days from completion, from total completion. But pretty exciting, to say the least. Let's talk to Dick Powell, because, you know, Dick is somebody that, you know, Dick is reserved. We'll see. We'll see. We'll let Dick be the arbiter, and see how he takes on the new building. Dick Powell, good morning.
Steve, good morning. That was interesting. And what I did was I went to the governor, downloaded the report.
Yeah,
that has all the renderings and stuff like that. So that was interesting. And, yeah.
What did from a design standpoint, aesthetically, did you find it pleasing?
Well, what, a, What do I know about this?
All right. Well, because you've been to some big international venues, and
it's true, but it's a matter of functionality. You could have a beautiful design, and it doesn't work. So this looks like it's going to have both. One thing I noticed, I'm not nitpicking, but the finish line has been moved farther down the stretch, which means the run into the first turn is a lot shorter. So for 6-furlong dirt races, I'll be curious to see how far up they have to move the gate on the backstretch, because they're going to have to accommodate a longer stretch. Now, one thing, Belmont always had this reputation of how long the stretch was, and it wasn't. And it was because Belmont was a 12-furlong track divided in half. And the finish line was literally halfway through the home stretch. So it was only like 960 feet or 1,000 feet. There was other tracks way longer. Now, granted, it's a big sweep and turn that you already have momentum before you even hit the straightaway. So now it'll be more like other tracks where, you've got a longer finish. You turn home, you might have 1,100 feet, 1,200 feet. So that looked interesting. And when you look at one of the renderings, you really do get the sense of how small the building is. And what David was saying, being able to see like front side and back side at the same time, it's a more narrow building. Years ago, when you built racetracks, you had to have these big, wide monstrosities because you had buy-in tickets on one side, and on the other side of the Mutual Bay was cash-in tickets. So you had that room for lines on both sides.
That's a good point.
The way racetrack was designed. Well, you don't have to do that anymore. So a lot of that space was really wasted. And this looks like it'd be much more economical and efficient.
And also bright and airy and obviously warm. It's going to be a winterized building, which goes a long way. As Dave referenced, I mean, even in what should have been, warmer temperatures, the building was just cold. I mean, whether it's the steel, the superstructure, and it is going to take a demolition team. I mean, to take this building down. Adam Conklin has talked to me about, he's got the office in the basement and with the photo studio, and he's talked about the concrete walls down there. And he said if there was ever a nuclear attack, he knows where he would. He said he knows where he would head. Yeah,
exactly.
He would head to Belmont.
Yeah.
And that
not only cold, but it was a breezeway.
Yeah.
So if there was any kind of wind outside, it just whipped through Belmont. It was on a nice warm day. Yeah, it was great. But what was it? The 05 Breeders' Cup.
Yeah.
Oh my God! I was so cold, and I came prepared, and I was still frozen.
It was unbelievable, and it's hard to if you weren't there, it's hard to describe. I mean, just how bitterly cold it was, and then I do remember that distinctly for being the Sopranos Breeders' Cup, because they were all half the cast seemed to have been at Breeders' Cup, and there was a party in the tent in the backyard, one of the backyard tents after the races, and they were all there. So that always sticks in my head. But I just remember, and I had a heavy wool coat and a hat, and it took forever to get warm. So this will be it's exciting.
Well, and it's something newsworthy for New York racing that's positive and futuristic and all that.
Well, not if you're on Twitter. not if you're on social media.
That's the beauty of Dick Powell. He's not on Twitter.
Good, because I've never seen anything so ridiculous. It's amazing. It's just something else. Finding, you know, trying to go out of your way to you know, find complaints. And all anybody had to do was look at the projects that they've been involved in, Populous, and ask it Longchamp and the Cara. They all have that, went in that direction. You know, sparkling, yeah, glass and modern, you know, modern styling. Yeah, we didn't need to build a new Ebbets Field here. That wasn't the idea. just because Camden Yards and the, you know, the you had that trend in baseball, we didn't have to go in that direction. let's go in the direction of HKJC, where I hope everybody got on board, because Dick is 2 for 2 as we look toward the nightcap, 8 minutes to post in the Happy Valley ninth. And this includes a 1540 winner that was booted home by you, Bowman, Celestial Colors, and trainer Jamie Richards. But then Strongest Boy came through at 8:30, and David Hayes and Zach Burton. So nice job, Dick.
Well, you gave Celestial Colors just a sensational ride, because he was one off the lead, and even turning for home, and never looked like he was going to go after the leader, but he was kind of inexperienced, so he suddenly lost energy, and there was no one behind coming, so you got it done then. And then the last race, Zach Purton just arrived on the scene real late with Strongest Boy, second choice, and he got up in time. So we are live with the three, Lyrical Motion. Hugh Bowman, who's having a big day, and Casper Founds, who's the king of Happy Valley, so that's a good combination there. They're in terrific form coming in, and they're getting bet like they're in terrific form. Flying Phantom, young horse, only has 4 starts. 2 back ran really well, gets Zach back aboard, and he just looks like he has a lot of improvement in him. He's a 3-year-old, so he has an upside. Hopefully he'll show it today. And then number 9, Happy Soul, from Danny Shum and Keegan DeMello. And last time out, beaten 2. Time before that, same thing, beaten 2. He's in every race. He draws much better today. Got to stay out of traffic from down on the inside. But I think if he gets any kind of trip, he'll be a big factor. So 3-7-9. We're alive.
Excellent. Excellent. Let me turn to, where does it go? Come on, here we go. Let's get some pricing too. What do you got for prices, Dick, on those?
Let's see.
Lyrical Motion.
Lyrical Motion is 3-1.
3-1. There we go. I got it.
Yeah. Happy Soul is 6, and Flying Phantom is 9-5. So we're rooting for Happy Soul, but I'll take any of them.
Yeah, we don't get Will Pays on.
No, I looked for them. No.
So no problem. All right. All I know is plenty of people are holding tickets.
And speaking of Will Pace, the other night, Saturday night, Sunday morning, the last 3 races were 10-1, 9-1, and 5-2 second choice. And the pick 3 paid $1,200. I didn't have it, but I was just like, when I looked at the prices, you know, the late trebles over 6,000 for the $10 mutual. Are you kidding? And the 10-1s weren't, it's not like there was an odds on horse in there that sucked up all the money, but it was crazy. So the lesson is, when you have 14-horse fields times 14-horse times 14-horse. You got a lot of combination. Money gets spread out, so if you have all three, you're usually going to get rewarded.
Well, no doubt. No doubt. And I would think, yeah, I would think that these payouts could be handsome, really, no matter which of the three. That first leg, you know, that goes a long way. 4 minutes to post. Why don't you do a quick, any other portion of the recap from the weekend?
Well, the stake was the second leg of the four-year-old series, the Hong Kong Classic Cup. And the big favorite, Helios Express, won it very narrowly with Hugh Bowman, as usual. Nice four-year-old. He seems to be able to stretch out. He seems to be able to relax better in his races. So he's now won the first two legs of the four-year-old series. The Hong Kong Derby will be March 24th. So that's coming up 2.5 weeks. It's nice to see these younger horses starting to mature and take up their places because, you know, Hong Kong, you get some three-year-olds, four-year-olds are developing, 5- and 6-year-old geldings, then it depends on how well they're doing. So you got like a in one door out the other, maybe 3-4 year window. So you need these young horses moving in, taking their place as the golden 60s of the world reach the end of their career. And he galloped the other day, so they stepped up his work. So he has the month of March, and I think the big race is April 28th. So he has about 8 weeks to see if he can get back to where he was winning in December. So that'll be nice. But Helios Express, really, really nice win. Just game as can be. What I liked with the race was they all were in it. You know, Chang Chang Glory is 52-1, just missed, and Sued is a nice horse. He was third for Ryan Moore, who is in the right now. And Starmack, you know, it was a nice race, but Helios Express used his class to win it by 0.01 seconds. So that shows you how close the finish was. We'll see if he can complete the three-race sweep. The other star of the night, one horse that stuck out. Divas 12 won a class 4 going a mile. Very fast time. Zach Burton rode for Chris So. This looks like he could be developing into a nice horse. And then Nervous Witness dominated a 1,000-meter sprint down the straightaway. He looks good. So it was a good week. Zach Burton kind of back in the catbird seat. He now he had 6 wins last week, 3 on Happy Valley, 3 at Chautauqua. Harry Bentley had 3, Hugh Bowman had 3. So Zach still has the lead, 75 wins. Karis Teton, who kind of slowed up last week, has 50, Hugh Bowman 38. And Angus Chung, who has a winner today, he's an apprentice rider that I expected a lot from, especially when Bowman got hurt in December. And he really didn't thrive, but lately he's just climbing out a win every meet, doing well, winning around 10% of his maps, which is good in Hong Kong as the field sizes are so big. So Angus Chung doing well, and he's always a factor with the 5 pounds off. So that was last week. And this week we have just a tremendous 7-furlong sprint, a Group 1, the Queen's Silver League Jubilee Cup. The leading sprinter, Lucky Suenas, is in there. He's going to face California Spangle, Red Lion, Galaxy Patch, who's an up-and-comer. Just a terrific race. And that should set up the rest of the sprint season for these horses. Victor, the winner, who's one of the other leading sprinters, is going to go to Japan in a race in a couple of weeks. So he won't be in it, but virtually every other top sprinter in Hong Kong is in Saturday night, Sunday mornings, Queen's Silver Jubilee Cup.
Nice.
It's also raining. It's raining at Hong Kong. It hasn't affected the track, but they had to move one of the winner circle presentations undercover. And, yeah, it's raining pretty good.
They're milling behind. So we're getting close, and I hope everybody's holding tickets and a chance to score here. It'll be fun. Be a good way to get the
With some of the big races this winter, we've had James McDonald riding in Hong Kong on it like a short lease, and the hope is that he would eventually move his tech. He comes in, he kind of raids Hong Kong with big mounts and stuff, with Romantic Warrior especially. And he's done obviously very well as a world-class rider. He gets huge business in Australia. He comes in and gets top mounts in Hong Kong. So it'll be interesting what his plans are, whether he can ride here full-time.
Let's get a final check. 7-2 on Lyrical Motion. You're 3. Flying Phantom is down to 2-1. Zach Purton. That's the 7 and the 9. Happy Soul. There was a Happy Soul in North America, too. Remember, right? Just a couple of years ago, Happy Soul.
Yeah, I think it was around Happy.
Yeah, Happy Soul. 5-1. So 3-7-9 gets us home, and just about set. Got a couple more to load in this nightcap. This the Tai Fung Coach Handicap. They're going to go 6. Good luck if you're riding along with Dick Powell here. It looks like 2 more to load, and we'll be set for a start.
Joyful Life 3.4 Flying Phantom, Hero Star at around 18s now, as we are set for the Tai Fung Coach Handicap to round out the night. Sergeant Pepper, Barrier 1. Lined and ready, started on the rostrum. They're racing. He bounded away very quickly to Sergeant Pepper from the inside, but not as quick as Hero Star for Angus Chung from Barrier 12. Handlebars down, and he crosses the face of the field. Lucky Planet second, Sergeant Pepper in the trail as the leaders back the tempo right off now, and a few getting on heels. And round the outside comes Joyful Life to now go up and have a look here at Hero Star. Back behind Sergeant Pepper, one off is Happy Golf, and then came Team Happy, who's 3 out. Back behind them is Happy Soul. There's Flying Phantom up earlier as well. Now he's 3 wide, up near the pace, racing in about 3rd or 4th. Togepi is 4th last here, followed by Mr. Fox, and then came Lyrical Motion and High Rise Soldier, the last one. Hero Star in front over Joyful Life, and 3rd is Flying Phantom, but he's done it tough. Lucky Planet travelling okay, just needs it out. He's pocketed at this point, now gets into the clear. Sergeant Pepper, Happy Soul back behind them, Happy Golf out wider, Hero Star still in front. Here's Happy Soul through over on the inside. He's rushing after them now. He's claimed the lead. Here is Happy Soul. He's clear now by a length and a half. Lucky Planet, Happy Golf, but Happy Soul clears out to win the last. Lucky Planet, third in was Happy Golf, and then might be Lyrical Motion through over on the inside.
Well, Dick, there we go, and that's a happy result.
That was the one we wanted. That was the better price of the 3.
Well, and he did not get off well. He sort of took like a hop skip and was last at the literally first call.
And what worked out is I was torn between him and the 12 as the 3rd pick. And I knew Chung was going to gun from the outside. And he's in with like 112 pounds. He's going to make the lead. The question is how much energy is he going to use, and he got challenged by the 10, luckily. So he didn't get an easy lead from out there, and then kind of wore out the last 100 meters. But 9 came up the inside and won pretty convincingly.
And, you know, bounded home. And to be honest, Mello's ride here was clever. Here's the restart, and you'll see. Well, he didn't break badly. He just... He just was at the rear of the pack and basically grabs the rail and holds position. Nice.
Yeah, well, luckily someone went up and contested the 12.
Yep. on the outside.
I don't know if they would have caught him if he was loose on the lead, as we like to say.
Well, we'll talk to Seth Merrill later. We were loose on the lead Saturday from Gulfstream Park, which was pretty funny. We had so much fun.
Yeah, I saw him down there. I saw him on the simulcast feed.
You didn't watch the preview Saturday morning, 8 o'clock with the Seth and I?
No, if I'd have known, I might have. But no, I wasn't paying attention. Well, I was over it. The post was so early. I was at the hardest track at like 10:15, 10:30.
Nice. Nice. And, was there a good crowd?
Not bad. Yeah. It was, I enjoyed the race, and thank God the weather held up because Aqueduct, God, it was coming down sideways.
It was rough. It was rough.
Oh, that was awful.
Any thoughts about, between the Gotham and Fountain? And
it was just a shame that the race, the Fountain Youth, fell apart. Two trainer scratches in the morning, and then a scratch going to the gate. And it looked like Speakeasy's connections made the smart move, avoiding Conquest Warrior on Friday, who looked really good. But then they get there, and he unseats Ortiz and doesn't run, and now everyone's like, all right, we got one shot to get points. It'd be nice to be first or second. So, yeah. But Danny's horse was good, and I think he gets a lot out of that race. Even though the field wasn't as competitive, he was challenged. And Louis just kind of hand-rode him while he was surrounded, inside, outside. So I like that, and he finished good. I think he'll move way forward off that race. So he was good, despite the asterisk that's going to be put on the race with, three horses not competing. But the other races were the Gulfstream Turf is crazy fast. So they're running like a mile and a half, 2:22 or 3, this mile and 32 to that course. And it's held up great. Whatever they did this time, when they put in a new turf course,
right,
really has worked. Now, it might be weather, might have been, the last time they didn't get the right circumstances, but that course still looks good considering it's March and it's been hard used December, January, February.
Well, waiting and hoping. I was hoping before we wrapped that we'd maybe get a quick official domestically in terms of numbers, but I don't. It's not.
Yeah, that'll be a couple. Be all right.
Yeah,
it'll usually
take some like 6-8 minutes after. So we'll keep an eye on it and congratulate Dick Powell on what I think is going to be a pretty nice pick three here to close out.
I think it worked out fourth choice, second choice, third choice.
Well, then, every leg that a favorite is not involved is an exponential benefit. So the final order here, by the way, 9-11-1-3 is how this finished up. That Lucky Planet ran very well with Harry Bentley. And the one, I think, was a price. Happy Golf, 11-1. So
now they're going to another replay.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dick, I appreciate it. And well done. We'll give everybody the number when it comes up. And we'll talk to you from Ocala next week.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
Dick Powell, everybody, with a very nice score for all of you. And I hope some of you came aboard. I'm waiting for that. I'm waiting for off to turn into finished here. Can tell you that Jason Beam is going to join us today. we'll speculate on the field. We think we know what the field is going to look like in the Tampa Bay Derby. But it's just always fun to talk to Jason and catch up with him. So we'll do that after the bottom of the hour break. Typically, we would have had Sid here with us the last couple of years, and he couldn't make it. So we're going to do the phone with Sid, too. All right? And now here it is. Of course, if all I had to do was hold Dick for another 45 seconds, and we would have had the number to give him. All right, let's go to the final. Happy Soul paid $1,270, and the pick three, $168.40. $289. So thanks to Dick Powell. That's the $1 pick three. Sid Fernando, good morning.
Good morning. And welcome to Tampa.
Welcome. I got to tell you, I texted you earlier.
Yeah.
It has gotten every year. I've been coming for however many years. The first time I came to a Tampa Bay Derby was actually the Street Sense. The great Street Sense any given Saturday matchup. The traffic here, Sid, is rivaling the Belt Parkway and 95 on the other side of the state. It's crazy.
It's unbelievable. Steve, Tampa's been a magnet for people here. I just read the other day that every day there's 150 new people moving to Tampa. There's not enough housing here.
I stay a little bit north typically, and I can see it. I can see between, what is that, 75 and the bay and the Gulf, that corridor is insane. The building. I mean, there's new roads they're building. I see big tracts of property, and honestly, I think you could even push this out as far as Ocala, because Ocala is out of control. So this whole corridor. It's a triangle.
And then if you go into like the Tampa closer, right into the city, it's even worse.
Yeah.
Where I am, it's like, oh my God, I left New York
for that.
And it's traffic. Yeah.
It found you.
Mm-hmm. That's why you hear all this construction in the background now, too.
Well, and anybody, it's been going on. I asked you about the backup noise of, the construction vehicles, and it's been going on for a long time. I mean, I suppose, really, Orlando, if you made a triangle of Orlando, Tampa, Ocala, it's a, like a triumvirate.
High growth.
Yeah.
A real high growth area, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're not coming here for the education system.
No, they're not. No, they are not.
I can't help myself. I'm sorry. Sid, we started the morning with Dave O'Rourke updating us on everything going on with the new Belmont. What you went to Belmont your whole life. What's your impression of this fresh new design?
You can't fight change, and the old Belmont was built for 70,000 plus people, right? You don't get that kind of on-track crowd anymore. So, it's just a matter of evolution right now.
Do you like you like aesthetics? What do you make of the aesthetic?
I do like aesthetics. I'm very much into aesthetics. Gina, leave it. I'm going to hold off on it until I see, what it's really like. But you know, just with that, just, you know, it's symptomatic of life. I mean, it, you know, things happen, things change, bull crops go down. You know, a bull crop used to be 54,000 or 55,000. Now they're 18, right? So if you look at Belmont for 55,000 people and now it's built for 18, I mean, there's a parallel there.
No, fair point. It to me, it's very exciting that you're going to have a by let's say 27. So I mean, really only 28. You're going to have all three venues of the Triple Crown. Are going to be state-of-the-art facilities. I mean, Churchill has been changing and morphing nonstop for 20 years. I first went there in '99, and that was the first time. And what that building is now, it isn't recognizable to what it was only 25 years ago.
Right.
And so they're using the existing, the existing facility. There's only going to be one part of the building. Once they finish this renovation for Derby 150, there's only going to be that one end of the clubhouse that they're sort of struggling with what to do with it. But ultimately I'm sure it'll be refashioned. But I mean, what they've done at Churchill is just incredible. And you're going to have an entirely new Pimlico and an entirely new Belmont. And, racing can proudly say that they'll have, for its centerpiece event, the Triple Crown will have the most modern facilities in American sport.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yes. But yet... but yet there's somebody out there trying to figure out a way to make it a negative. It's quite something. Let's get a couple of things in as well, Sid, because no sooner had you floated an idea, First Racing, was reacting necessarily, but you made the suggestion about the potential for a series, and literally within 2 weeks, we get this announcement of the Pegasus, Preakness, and new, Cal Crown being put together, for a bonus for, the two horses that could sweep the sequence, the same thing, not just for the dirt, but for the turf horse as well. You wrote about it. I saw it in your piece. Some thoughts about what it represents, and you made the suggestion it could do some damage, actually, and take away a little bit from the Triple Crown and Cup.
Well, we made that, you and I were discussing, that was a possibility. To me, it was pretty obvious that they should do that. They did do that. And of course, it's competition. One track wants to compete against the other. And, so this year they had a ready-made audience because the Baffert horses, by choice, by their owners' choices, decided to not go to Churchill Downs for the Derby. The owners could have moved their horses by the deadline and didn't. So that was a choice made by them not to go. So what First did was they came up with this incentive, the plan for this, and that January 31st broadcast where we discussed this, we also discussed the fact that this could, help the older horse division as well. Here's what happens. You go through all these preps. you go to the Derby, and then you have to come back 2 weeks later in the Preakness. It's, you know, it chews up horses, right? Well, now, if the Baffert horses don't go to the Derby, they have a lot of time in between their last start and the Preakness, which is a great saver for them. And then, you know, if they win, they can structure a campaign to get to the Awesome Again Cal Crown name switch race with plenty of space. And then that horse could be ready for the Pegasus for a potential bonus. I pointed out in the article I wrote that it was, you know, really based on, what's that horse that just won the Pegasus? National Treasures. It was based on his campaign. He won the Preakness. He didn't go in the Derby. Contested the Awesome Again, where he ran fourth. And was ready for the Pegasus, which he won, right? Look at what happened with the horse over the weekend, Newgate. Didn't contest the Triple Crown. Now he's won the Big Cap. Both those horses have potential to have a big say in the handicap races or the older horse races this year, which is a boon to racing, right? What this does in terms of the Derby, though, is, you know, it potentially allows people to say, hey, you know what? It's too much. We're gonna wait for the Preakness. Now, it's not going to affect everybody, but the Baffert owners, Baffert, he's won a lot of Derbies. As I pointed out in that broadcast, I don't know how they feel, but I'm sure some of them are kicked off. And ultimately, it could detract in the sense that it could detract competitors from the Derby, which, you know, the Derby is supposed to be a race where all the top horses in the country, the three-year-olds, get together to hammer it out. Well, this year, all the leading horses from California by choice are not going there. They could have gone if they moved their horses from Baffert. So that's why I say it was an owner decision to consciously say, we're not going to the Derby. And as I pointed out in the broadcast with you on January 31, you know, you want to just get directly, as I pointed out, it was a big FU to CDI from Baffert's owners. So, we'll see what happens. But it's a thing now that First Racing has done to compete with the Triple Crown in a way by creating a bonus triple for their tracks, $5 million. Win the Preakness, you win the Awesome Again, and then you win the Pegasus. Besides all the purse money, and the Preakness purse money has been increased to $2 million for 1.5, you get a $5 million bonus just for that dirt series, right? So it's something that you know is definitely a competing reinforcer, as we say in dog training. You know,
good. The one thing that should be included is ideally, I mean, the concept that all the best 3-year-olds assemble for Derby, that's never played out historically. You think about any number of horses that either weren't ready. Or in some cases, I mean, just happenstance, certainly none more famous than General Duke, being scratched on Friday. Even recently, I mean, horses like Uncle Mo and Forte and Escondorea and so forth. I mean, the AP Indy not being ready, you know, in time for... You know, plenty of horses that just, yeah, for whatever reason, couldn't get there and didn't get there. So to me, I don't know. I the hand wringing from that standpoint of people saying, oh, it's not going to be representative, or it's not going to be that's just.
Oh no, you're always going to get the horses, you know, that through attrition from whatever it is, aren't going to make it.
Yep.
They're not going to make it. But in this particular case. And there could be, you know, in this particular case, what's pretty evident is there's a bunch of horses there. Take attrition out. They've actually consciously said before the Derby, we're not going.
Right.
So that's the difference.
Yeah.
Anybody could be going for the Derby, Fort K's, AP Indies, Rouse Dark, if you go back, got hurt the week of the Derby. There's all sorts of horses that get hurt, and that's just part of the game. But what's different here is the conscious decision of the Avengers with Imagination, who just won the San Felipe. Amr Zidane with Muth and Maymoon. Susan Chu with Niso is the top-ranked colt so far. Doc Allard and Jack Liebau with
Winstock. Yep.
They're all saying, well in advance, we're not going. So that's the big, what's a little different about it.
True.
The conscious decision, regardless of what may happen with racing and attrition and getting hurt, they've just said, we're not going. Now, that's going to help their horses, actually, because they're not going to be squeezed to get in, right?
Yeah.
So that's a positive effect. There's a different way. Now, I think competition's always good. So, you know, first does this. Maybe they start to draw horses away. Maybe Churchill comes back and says, we're going to raise it to 10 million, forcing people to look at it again. You know, it's competition. And that could end up being a positive, too. That could be the next step that Churchill does to answer this.
Good point. Yep. All right. Well, for those that haven't yet signed up at Substack for the work that Sid and Francis Caron are doing, go to Substack and put in your email. It's called Sid Fernando plus Francis J. Caron Observations, and it's great to have Sid and Francis churning out opinions.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, Steve. For the last year, I really wasn't doing much writing because I got this dog and I wanted to spend a lot of time kind of raising her. She just turned a year now. And I said, you know what? You kind of get that itch to go back and write again. So, and it just so happened that our company blog at workhorse.com, the blog portion got dated and we couldn't update it. So we said, you know what? Let's just start a Substack and get it out. And the response has been fantastic, I got to say. It's got some great analytics on there and, we're getting like a reach of 15,000 people, which is pretty damn good for just two people putting out a blog, you know?
Well, in 3 weeks or not
even
a month. I mean, you just started it.
And they're all take nothing away from people on Twitter and their discussions and everything, but what's actually been kind of nice about it is they're knowledgeable people, mostly that are in the game, that are really interested in it. And we just put out a little post on Twitter that it's there, but it's not generating the Twitter outrage, the Twitter self-aggrandizement, the stuff that takes place on Twitter. And it's a much more knowledgeable group of readers. And so it's been kind of nice that way, and a revelation, actually.
Well, and that certainly quite welcome.
Certainly is.
Right, to say the least. Let me bring in Deterministic and the win in the Gotham. And there's real reason to believe this is a serious player as the sophomore campaigns unfold. Liam's map, which is notable for a couple of reasons in this environment, because you and I have talked extensively about Unbridled Song and the eagerness of some to malign him as a some kind of detriment to, you know, to the quality of equine stock. Liam's map with a Spitestown mayor. And that is interesting in itself. Tisnow in this female family, second dam, is a Tisnow daughter. A Dixieland band mayor, Amelia, is the third dam. And there's an Aladar, not just an Aladar, but an Aladar daughter out of Courtly D. I mean, this is a powerful female family, and I'm eager to hear your thoughts about what Tom Hinkle fashioned here. This is a Hinkle Farms bred.
It's a terrific family, as you just mentioned, Aquilesia. I mean, this is that great Helen Alexander, Helen Groves, mother-daughter family that, you know, has, you know, this family, it's a family, if nothing else, if people don't remember, this is the family of Althea. In fact, Aquilesia is a sister to Althea. It's through the Aquilesia branch. It's a great, great family. I mean, the Aquilesia's daughter, Amelia, by Dixieland Band, she's produced, you know, at least five or six stakes winners. It's one of those great families that you want to have in your broodmare band. And even though the second dam by Tisnow hasn't produced a stakes winner, the dam by Spitestown comes up with this horse, and it's excuse me, it's the allergies. It's what happens with really good families. You know, they can come back. And here we have Deterministic from this family of Althea. He is a serious horse. Liam's Map and Arrogate basically were the last hopes of Unbridled Song as a sire of sire maker. And Liam's Map has already done that. He's a really good stallion. Stands at Lane's End. We actually did the mating of Liam's Map. As well as the half-brother, Not This Time, another great sire. And, you know, again, sometimes there's a lull when a horse has a good success early on. And then you got to get through those third, fourth, and fifth books, and then they start to rebound again. That's what's happening here. And a very legit horse, incredibly great pedigree. And, you know, he's the type of horse that you think will really like 10 furlongs as well.
And it's, you know, it's notable because I think people are going to glance at first blush and see a Spitestown dam and wonder, you know, immediately wonder, you know, how eligible he is to, you know, to go 10 panels or more.
Yeah, but, you know, that's not giving Spitestown his due, because Spitestown himself, his sire, has had several horses that have won at 10 furlongs or above, you know. In fact, the Spitestowns, something I've written about in the past, it's called the Spitestown effect. They tend to be best after June of the three-year-old season. Now, Spitestown himself didn't become a grade one winner until he was six. There's a late developing combination of both these horses. Deterministic, he's a combination of those two lines. They need a little patience, but if you give that to them we talked about this with Unbridled Song, where the later Unbridled Song horses were some of his best, and that includes Arrogate and Liam's Map in that group, where some of the earlier ones looked physically mature, looked mentally mature, but they just weren't physically ready because of their size to take the early punishment, and a lot of them did break down. Once people started to understand that and give them more time, there were different horses. Same thing is actually true of Spikestown, even though physically he would appear to be a horse that would have really early maturing horses because he's more of a compact sprinter build. But the same holds true for him, too. Like I said, some of his best horses were horses that were best after June of their three-year-old season. Deterministic, if you were to make a prediction, you would have to say this horse will probably continue to improve throughout the year if handled properly. And that's an exciting aspect to him if you were to look at it and incorporate pedigree into your management of the horse.
Well, you know, certainly he's gotten any kind historically, and, you know, turf milers and all, you know, all different types. And in fact, you know, it's funny. I'm looking at this pedigree, Sid, and there's two brothers that Courtly D had part of this that I'm going to have to file into my horses that time forgot. A pair of exclusive native sons, Native Courier and Keto, K-E-T-O-H.
Mm-hmm.
And Keto won the Cowden in his second start for Lucas, ran in the Aqueduct Breeders' Cup in 85, then got the winner off, won a stake at Santa Anita to start his three-year-old year, and then got sick and died.
Yeah.
Keto, 3-for-5, and then Native Courier, who was the younger brother earlier. I mean, she had 18 foals. This Native Courier was a terrific turf horse.
Yeah, I remember watching him, too. Yeah, it was a terrific turf horse. The family did get a lot of turf runners. Bertolini, a very fast Danzig, was a top horse in Europe. But don't forget also, this is also the family of Bayern, you know. He won the Breeders' Cup Classic. And he was by Awfully Wild. It was a two-year-old horse, really. And so there's the possibility of turf. There's the possibility of dirt. Liam's Map himself, obviously, like you said, has been able to get runners across the spectrum, including sprinters, like the one at the G1 winner that's at the Spencer Vet Stud, as well as turf horses, like that horse that won the Pegasus Turf. What was his name? Off the top. Was it Colonel Liam?
You mean what, last year? The year, 2 years ago now? Because last year he missed.
Colonel Liam.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
But then he's had good two-year-olds like Juju's Map and that horse that won the Basin, that won the Hopeful. And so he gets a wide variety of horses, even though he's an Unbridled Song. And so does his family. So, you know, there's a lot of possibilities here. Like I said, I would assume this horse on pedigree would continue to improve and actually get better with age, too.
Well, and you could tell Christophe Clément, very, very excited, very bullish, and seems like a lot of people that, you know, sometimes are pretty, you know, discerning and dismissive, came away impressed with the performance. And of course, you know, the wet track I don't want to say tempers, you know, tempers the excitement, but still has to go out and take the next step. He was another horse that everybody pointing for the bluegrass. That was Chris considering the bluegrass for him as well. So two turns will be next for Deterministic. We don't need to talk about Dornick. We did plenty of Dornick.
Yeah.
Last year as a two-year-old, so we'll save that. Again, we'll direct everybody toward the Substack and the opportunity to read Sid again. And you've been using that observations as a
very good
title for a long time.
Very good. Yeah, my first blog was Sid Fernando Plus Observations. Then I had that was on WordPress. Then on Substack, I later did that limited MF Doom blog, which was Sid Fernando Plus Observations on Substack. And then this third blog is Sid Fernando Plus Francis J. Caron : Observations. And
even the thing from the Daily Racing Forum, right? Wasn't that Observations?
No, that was the Taking Stock. So I had that Taking Stock at Daily Racing Forum, and then when I was at TDN, I did the same thing.
There we go. So
the print media I do Taking Stock, the online stuff I do Observations.
I like it. I carried around a similar kind of thing when I started writing at Colgate in the Maroon with you called it Concerning Sports, and you know, kind of a take on Howard on Cosell speaking of sports, and that was sort of the approach in that era. Pretty good. Sid, thank you as always.
Okay, great. I'll talk to you soon.
By the way, you're coming up to OBS?
I'm hoping to, but you know, with these allergies that I'm having, I could not function at all yesterday.
And so
what happened is my wife Cynthia, I was wondering why I didn't have these last year. I just realized she planted a garden here with only native Florida plants.
So you're not used to it.
And things are just putting out all sorts of pollen.
Unbelievable. That's what they say. They say that everybody that's living in Arizona, they moved out there, you know, for that kind of reason. But then they all planted like crazy, and they don't understand.
Yeah.
They don't understand why they're still having allergy problems because they've completely changed the makeup of the environment out there with all kinds of pollen. It's very funny.
I know.
Yeah, people just, I guess, the succulents weren't enough.
No.
Sid, I'll see you up there at Ocala.
All right, see you, Steve.
I appreciate it. There we go. Sid Fernando, everybody, and Sire Watch. Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale. We'll take a quick break. Jason Beam is sitting here. Look, it's just unbelievable what you've done. You look fabulous. It's excited for you. Let me take a headset, and you know what? I'm wondering. Let me see if since you're here, why waste 3.5 minutes? Well, that's fine. They'll be paid one way or the other. You know what? We can go to the top of the hour. That's fine.
You want to talk about allergies again?
You said
I'm getting drilled with them. Yeah. So I was actually glad to hear. So hi, Sid. I haven't seen Sid since last year, but. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Since the first year I moved here, I didn't have any problems with. Last year there was something called the red tide over on the beach, and they were saying that was affecting a lot of people. But this year, I've been stuffed up for like 3 straight months, and it never ends.
I have never dealt with it, but in the end of, I've had allergies, but
yeah.
Right at the end of the year when we were in Ireland, I came back and I had a little something. Mm-hmm. Tina had been really sick. But for the first time ever, I've got a little bit of a raspy thing that won't go away.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, it's, and for me, it's mild enough to where it's just a nuisance, but it does get kind of annoying.
Well, and especially if you're in mid race, mid throat, and suddenly you can you hear in your own voice, you can hear that little gurgle that, and you know that. This is obviously, you know, people that speak for a living problems. It's a little unusual.
Yeah, I got to take a little swallow at the 3/8 poll. It was funny when Jessica was first getting started. Like, we'd talk about little tricks of the trade and stuff, you know, and because she was kind of learning on the fly. And I told her, I said, read the fractions to tell people the fractions, but they're like, they're the perfect break. You know, the opening half mile, 46-2. Okay, reset. I'm going to slide over. I'm going to move my, but like you have, it gives you some time, like to,
like a semicolon.
Yeah, exactly. And so I always have used the fractions for my reset to kind of adjust my, you know, adjust where I'm looking and just take a breath and take a swallow if you need to. Cause sometimes, you know, you get too much saliva working up, which I know is gross. Sorry, people, but these are the hazards of the occupation. In fact, the Sam F. Davis, I should have swallowed midway on the turn because by the end I was kind of just, you know, not in a comfortable way. I mean, it worked out fine, but, yeah.
Then, of course, there's the bugs, the bugs flying.
That's Peter Berry's problem. That's he swallowed moths up there. So I swallowed a bug at Monmouth Park. It was the last race of a week. It was a Sunday. It was a turf race. And Monmouth, it's an open air booth.
It's an open booth.
And they're coming. God, they were going in the gate, and I swallowed a bug. And so I hit the button, coughed as hard as I could, and the race is on, and a good start. And by the time they got in front of me, I had to turn it off, and, like, I took a sip of water, I took a cough, still couldn't get it out, and the whole call was, like, it was literally, you're good, father, they're on the 14, and, you know, here comes Jairo Rendon. like, Mike Deeney for Jairo Rendon. And so just trying to, like, struggle through the call. I remember John Himes being like, you okay? And I was like, no.
What a bug.
Yeah, but it's going to happen.
No, I haven't seen the usually you put the pictures of when they come on the glass
that's Colonial. Colonial, there's like velociraptors crawling on the glass up there. Forget about it. Yeah, my first year I didn't see them as much. Maybe the move to daytime has affected that, because when we ran nights, I mean, there were 6-inch animals that were crawling on those. I remember calling Joe Byrne and go, what is this? It was the same realization like when I saw an alligator here for the first time. Like, I'm from Seattle. I've never seen an alligator. I thought they were like mythic creatures that existed in a previous world. We got two that live right here.
Exactly.
Gaspar. He's not out today yet.
What's the other one's name?
I forget. I just don't. We named Gaspar because of Gasparilla. But I do think there's two. But it seems like you only see one at a time.
Well, you should name the other one Pasco.
That's actually pretty good. Yeah,
yeah, right.
Yeah, the Gasparilla and the inaugural is not a very good name for an alligator.
It might be inaugural for the first person first patron that gets, you know, that gets eaten.
Well, he ran on the track last year. He walked on the track. They had to jump. The funniest thing ever was one of the jocks who got kind of interfered with because another jock was trying to avoid the alligator. His spouse was the trainer, and when he got back, she goes, "Why didn't you claim foul?" He goes, "He was avoiding an alligator. You want me to try to ring the guy up for that?" She's like, "Well, they put you up."
they've got the one at Palm Beach Downs.
Yeah,
that comes out, and
Delta's got one too, I think.
Yeah, Delta, yeah. Absolutely. I think it's a problem fairly unique to racing, right? You don't hear about this in baseball.
It's not the Marlins game, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, what other sports have water feature? I mean, the Tampa Rays have actual devil rays in the outfield, but it's... dingers or whatever, but they swim around. It's out in the outfield, and you can go up and, like, touch them and... It's a whole deal.
That's almost creepy. They'll end up like, what's his name? Steve, who was the Australian?
Oh, Steve Irwin. Yeah, Steve Irwin. Yeah.
Didn't
he got stabbed
by,
I think it might have been a stingray. You might be right, yeah. I mean, they've obviously, like I said, they've taken whatever precautions. Because, I mean, little kids will go up and touch I've touched the top of them.
If Tina was with me, she would tell the story of us being at Boynton, or we might have been at Delray Beach, and a flock of them. Is there a term for?
Oh, there has to be, right?
Right,
a school,
a pride.
I feel like a lot of fish school. Are school.
So that's true. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah,
but they're not really. Are they? They're not really fish. So whatever, yeah. a gaggle. A pride.
A prickle? Isn't that what it is for porcupines? A prickle of porcupines?
Oh, that's great, actually.
I think it is.
Is there a list? Is there a master
There's
list?
There's got to be. I'm looking it up. Group of devil rays.
it'll be probably a school. But so all of a sudden you see the tip of their ray flap come up.
Yeah.
Well, at a glance, you think to yourself, that's a shark.
Yeah.
But it ended up being a ray. And so I headed for the shore, and Tina is between the Tina's here, the ray is here, and I'm here. And so I'm closest to the shore. So Tina wanted to know why I didn't come towards her protect her from whatever this was. So I've been hearing about this for ages. It's a problem, actually.
Did it take her a while to realize that, like, big chunks of her life were going to be on this show?
It's a good question, because...
there had to have been at some point where she's just like, you know, they didn't need to know that.
That's true. I had... She... Well, you know, creating the Derby Barbie character. That
okay.
was... We've sort of semi-retired the Derby Barbie character. Uh-huh.
It lived on Twitter, though, right?
Oh, she left Twitter. That was part of it.
Okay.
She had enough of the Twitter, and so I still have DerbyBarbie.com, though. I renew it every year. It's too good.
Yeah.
There's got to be something to do with it. I went to the Prince and with a couple of ideas, marketable, you know, marketable. There's some products that you could, absolutely, you know, that was my background.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So
the Prince,
it's the greatest nickname ever.
I know. It's funny. I refuse to use it because Gary's, you know, he's a supervisor. I want to show him. Me, I was like, let's talk air conditioning, because I said I got priorities here, and so it's always been the coldest room up there, and so when I got up there, it was not cold, and so it was kind of hot, so, you know, I got some fans, and Frank Hoff kept telling me, like, oh, we're going to get it looked at, so Arlington Million Day comes about, and I got to wear a suit and a tie and the whole nine yards to do TV. The second I closed my door for the first race, coat off, shirt off, tie off, shoes off, because it's hot, and... So I'm sitting there getting ready for like the fourth or the fifth race of the day. Again, in a scrubby under t-shirt, my trousers and socks. In walk Gary and a lot of Churchill Brass. And they're fully decked out, suits, ties, jackets, the whole nine yards.
Great.
And I was like, hello, I'm the face and voice of your racetrack. Nice to see you. I dabble as a homeless person. And so, but thank goodness. What's the gentleman who's the racing secretary? Ben? Churchill's racing secretary.
Ben Huffman,
yes. Ben was there, and he right away goes, boy, it's hot in here. And I was like, yes, it is, Ben. Thank you for noticing, and that's why I look like this. And so when Gary's walking out, I was like, hey, 5-minute heads up next time, please.
Yeah, okay.
So then, of course, Virginia Derby Day, Gary comes in just himself, same picture. And I said, I said, I'm fired after today. I mean, they fire you at the end of the season because it's seasonal work, you know. And so I said, I understand, Gary, if I'd ever come back. But Gary's been awesome. I love Gary.
Well, some of the facilities up in that area. I mean, I did the show from a rather awkward.
From the open, I mean, the press box, or the little...
Well, no, I was in that closet.
Oh, the old Equibase closet or whatever.
Which, there was... If equipment had fallen on me, they'd still be looking for me.
Yeah.
It, But it was the only place where the port was live.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the oh no, I was thinking of a different one. You're in the one that says like broadcast studio, but it's just a storage room. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was sitting on
no windows. He was sitting on it. You were sitting on a box that like carried cable.
Exactly.
For TV. Yeah, you know.
You make do. You have to make do. Talk about the season, and here is the festival, as they call it.
Yeah, it felt like it snuck up on me this year. The first year I was so nervous for the big races here that like it was giving me stomach problems and stuff. So I try to just live in the present and worry about today and not the big days. But this year it kind of snuck up, and we've had a bit of weather lately. We're off the turf today, and as we're looking at it, looks beautiful right now. But we got just drenched with rain.
Crazy. It was woke me up.
Yeah, me too. And so, really, somebody told me we'd only been off the turf actually like 25 races, and sometimes we get a little heat for not drawing too far out in advance. But a big reason we do that is so Peter can see the weather and adjust accordingly in terms of scheduling turf races. So we've had 3 or 4 days where we were quote unquote off the turf, where we either didn't card any turf races or carded one. So we really haven't lost a ton of turf races. Even today, I think that it was the same thing. They only carded 2 today, the 3rd and the 5th. So we didn't actually lose out on a ton. Both those races today kind of fell apart a little bit, but there's still 7 races that are going to be run over the main track. So that's been a little bit of a frustration, but field size has been better this year, obviously with the purse enhancement. That's contributed to that. We haven't really had the dominant connections as much, which I think is good. It's been a little bit chalky, but it's been competitively chalky, which I know sounds like a terrible,
a qualifier,
a PR guy answer. But like there was one day, it was like 6 favorites won, but it was like they all won by a head, and they were like 5-2 or 2-1 favorite. So, I feel like that's been a little bit of a struggle, but it seems, I don't know. I'd rather see that than a bunch of 3-5s jogging off by 10. So, and there's been some good stories on track. I feel like we've got a couple really good apprentices this year. Charlie Marquez has been a good new addition this year as a jockey. Melissa Iorio, whose apprentice, has made a huge leap forward from last year just in terms of her ability. And she's just been winning a race a day, it seems like, lately. And so, but otherwise, I mean, it's been a pretty typical Tampa season, at least in my memory.
You got a lot of bugs.
Maldonado's doing really. He's getting a lot of live mounts. He's riding for a lot of the good barns.
7 pounds, yeah. For him, and you said Almedina. Almedina?
Who's Almedina? Is that Mary Ellis?
Yes.
It looks like Mary Angelis, but it's Mary Elise. I learned yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah. So she's from the Puerto Rico Jockey School. And rode a handful down there. Paula Bacon, who has Gallardo and Pablo here, who's one of the top agents. Paula's obviously a jockey here for a lot of years.
The legend.
I saw her yesterday, so it's funny.
She's terrific.
And so I met it's Mary Elise, but it looks like Mary Angelis. Because I even asked her, I was like, how do I say the name? And she's like, Mary Elise. I'm like, you sure? There's a G in there. She was like, yeah, yeah. And so, I think today will actually be her debut. She was supposed to ride one the other day.
Oh, how exciting!
So,
I'm glad I noticed it.
Yeah, yeah. So there's certainly been a, and what's funny too here is after this weekend the meet changes a little bit, right? We don't see Chad as much. We don't see Todd as much. We don't see Graham Motion as much. They all kind of start migrating north as soon as the Derby week cards. Not necessarily right away, but throughout this month. And, I remember my first year, Matty Rowland was kind of the big beneficiary of that. Like, all of a sudden, she was winning 1 or 2 races every day because a lot of the big riders start heading out, too, as April gets going and Delaware and those other Monmouth and stuff start kind of ramping up. And so the meet does change a little bit that last month. But,
Well, you were not kidding. Maranglis.
Yeah. Mary Elise.
Mary Elise.
Yeah.
Almedina. She's got 1 win.
With 19 starts or something.
19 starts, exactly.
Boy, Paula knew her stats. She told me she's 1 for 19. I was like, okay, great.
Well, and she's got 3 seconds and 3/3.
So does that show up on Equibase then? So I don't have to worry about saying her first career win, but a first North American,
because everything else is at
Carrero or is that
Camarero?
Camarero, that's right.
It's funny. She won in her second mount in January 1st.
Yeah,
and it's funny. We talked yesterday to Matty Oliver.
Yeah,
who has now won 2 graded stakes.
Super Chow, right?
Super Chow, and pretty cool. I mean, she's going to, she's going to be up against it maybe with losing the bug, which is coming any day. But this is a great venue to to break in.
Yeah, you get turf and dirt, and, you know, you get a fair number of days. I mean, it's 92 days throughout the year, counting the two in the summer, and so there is a fair bit of opportunity. I mean, Sammy's obviously kind of been the kingpin here in recent years, and Gallardo usually is kind of right behind him. But, you know, as Danny Centeno is kind of riding a little bit less as he's gotten older, I think there's just more opportunities. And like I said, field size has been up. So there was a funny story about it. I mentioned Melissa Iorio. She had her first career win was up at Delaware, but the horse got dinged after the fact, and so it took. And she didn't win one for a couple months after that. So her first win ended up, I think, still being up there. But she was like, "Yeah, that was kind of crazy to win it, and then have to win my first one again."
Poor thing. That's not pleasant. Just looking, actually, and this is the first look I've had in a while at the standings. Kathleen O'Connell.
Yeah, oh, she got off to an insane start. Like, she's kind of, I don't want to say regressed to the mean, but she's certainly kind of come back to the pack. She was hitting like 33%, and that was with, you know, she runs two and races a lot. I mean, she was just killing them early on in the season. She had built up a pretty big lead. I think she's still up by like 3 or 4, if I remember right. I haven't looked in a few days.
Yeah, but let's drop it down. It looks like, actually, 7. Jose D'Angelo, is sitting second. Jerry Bennett. Juan Arregada.
Yeah. And Juan owns his too. So, I mean, he was leading owner last year. And so he plays the claiming game as much as anybody. And, you know, his are always getting claimed and he's always claiming. So it's kind of fun to watch his ones.
Claude Ray McGahee III is a garish 8 for 19.
Yeah.
And he's got a couple coming over.
And he's always, I mean, he's literally running only in maiden specials and allowances and stakes, right? Like, he's not, he doesn't really come here for the 8,000 non-winner, 3 going 6. And so, you know, and it seems like a lot of them are, you know, Joseph Allen type horses that are all, you know, super, super nice, you know, well-bred horses. And, he's always, I mean, since I've been here, he's always done pretty good. I remember, I think it was him that had Scalding that beat Cody's Wish the first year in the Challenger, if I remember right.
That sounds right. Yeah. I tell you who's a little bit surprising. Well, he hasn't started many horses. I was looking for Arnaud Delacour's name.
Yeah, he hasn't run.
He's only run
much.
24.
Yeah. He's here. I mean, you know.
He's right there. Yeah. He's the first barn, right?
I thought Bennett was the first one right there, but okay. maybe, but he's in the vicinity for sure. Yeah. And he's Outmost Mornings. Yeah. No, just hasn't been running a ton this year.
Then you got the Shippens, Bill Morey, who wins everywhere. He's 7 for 30.
Because it's funny. He's messaged me a couple times like, "Hey, I'm at the driving range. If you want to come over." I was like, "I live 40 minutes from the track. I'm not spinning over for a quick bucket," but, Yeah, he's obviously done super good, but you know, he's just, my guess is he wants mostly turf horse down here, but he's run a lot of dirt ones too, so I shouldn't say that because he's up, you know, obviously up a turf way.
Well, and on the jockey front, a wider glance, Sammy Camacho.
Yeah. I mean, Sammy's he's always going to win here. I feel like.
Wow, but Camacho and Gallardo. I have literally a 30-win lead over everybody.
And what's crazy is, like, with Sammy, it doesn't seem like he has, like, 4 and 5-win days all that, like, you know, like that. He just seems to win, too, a lot. And you know, eventually they just start adding him. And he rides more races, I think, than most. But it seems like, I don't know, this year it seems like there's been quite a few races where he's not riding. And I think he had a short vacation for a couple of days, so he was kind of quiet there for a minute. But, he's the guy here.
You've got one of my favorites who's won a couple of races in our jacket, Angel Arroyo, who's healthy and is that a good winner.
Yeah, there's a whole slew, like you said, after you get out of the top couple there, I mean, between Pablo and Angel and, I'm trying to think, you know, Jose Batista, Charlie Marquez, I think, has kind of had himself, Jesus Castanon still winning races down here. And, there's a real good middle ground here of riders. And I haven't looked at the stands a few days. I feel like there's a huge glut of them between like 20 or 21 wins and 13 wins on the year. Like there's maybe 10 that are in that kind of area. Sam Marin's another one. He gets a lot of rides for Gerald Bennett and stuff. And Scott Spieth is inching towards 5,000. He's at 49.98, but he's pretty much only riding for his wife now.
I was going to say.
We're on 5,000 watch for him. I've gotten to call one rider's 5,000th. It was Perry Utes.
That's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. Kandinsky. I still remember the horse. River Downs. Yeah, 2007.
Exactly.
I'll never forget because the first year I was there, Perry was injured, and I didn't know a lot about River when I got the job. And I remember when he was coming back for the second year, I was talking to him. I was like, so you guys think Edgar Paukar is going to win the title again? They're like, no. I was like, what do you mean? They're like, Perry's back. I go, what do you mean Perry's back? Edgar won 100 last year. And everybody's like, yeah, Perry's going to win the title. And sure enough, he, you know, completely dominated him.
And he was only 68 then. that's what's amazing.
Because his wife was a teller, and I remember she would come walking out every time he'd win and, you know, take the picture, and, you know, it was...
He's amazing.
Yeah,
just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, the motorcycle thing, that was like a year after I left, I think, there, where he crashed the motorcycle and still won 3 or 4 or something that day. There's some of those guys that, like, they'll tell you, like, the minute I get off a horse, I'm worried I'll never be able to get back on. And, I, you know, I've heard from trainers and outriders and stuff, they're like, I can't get off because I know I'll never be able to get on if I do.
I mean, we got Tony Black, you know, if he wanted to, he could still do it at, you know, 70, but Utz is just, you know, for him to take as many calls as he does. Looking to the draw today, do we have any further news or anything that from downstairs that
I haven't heard anything. The rumor was Drip was not coming. Has that been confirmed?
Ooh.
So I don't want to, I mean, I guess I just said it. So, but try to ask about that, because I was told that that was maybe the case. But it might not be public now, but it is now. Sorry, guys. I heard it from somebody, but I heard it from a pretty good source. So.
I will find out.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we will all know in 4 or 5 hours anyway.
Yeah, but you'll know in hopefully 4 or 5 minutes. Okay, I've got a couple of sources that we
Yeah, because, well, I did, yeah, and I just interviewed Whit Beckman on the show, on my podcast, for today's episode, but I interviewed him on Monday, and he was driving back from Oaklawn, and it's always fun, like, talking to trainers that are kind of in that early stage of their career, and they're doing the driving all over hell and back, and, you know, he's got these two horses kind of on the trail with Honor Marie and Drip, so, yeah, so, but that was, like I said, that was kind of the, remember, I'm really curious to see if any of the scratchies from last week down south don't end up here.
Well, it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't appear that, well, certainly you're not getting Pletcher and either one, and Victory Avenue's not. So
no.
I think that answer is no. You are getting. I'll tell you, there's a horse that I think people better be aware of. This other Chad Brown.
Oh,
Good Money.
Yeah, yeah. He broke his maiden here, right? If I remember correctly, yeah.
And is apparently doing fabulous.
Yeah.
And he would, you know, he's going to, some people are going to open up the overnight later and you know, who is this? This may be a serious player, and he's going to be at a square number. And then you got the two potential runners. I had, you talk about having guests. I had Clement. He didn't say a word about Otello. And then hours later, he tells Dave Grenning that we may enter Otello. If Drip does not come, that would and Otello does, it would still leave a field of eight, unless there's any.
Yeah, I have not heard or seen too much. I saw the stakes coordinator last week. Because we've only had... For the two Sam Davises and the two Tampa Derbies I've been here for, it's only been full fields. And, you know, and I know that they were kind of working against that this year. So, which is funny because it's like, it doesn't seem like there's any kind of world beater showing up. But I think we've also had.
You know, from a timing standpoint, and
yeah, you got time for another. I mean, we saw it with Tapa Trice last year, right?
Exactly.
Like he went straight to the Bluegrass to do pretty good. And Classic Causeway ran, I think, in the Florida Derby right after his win here, if I remember correctly. I remember he didn't run very good, so it kind of killed his Derby price. But or I mean, you know, he would have been 8-1 or something like that. Instead, he went off at 35-1.
Well, and were you here when Danza won?
No. No. Classic Causeway and Tapa Trice, the only two I've called for the Derby. Danza was Arkansas Derby. Won he?
Who was there? Was Pletcher won here with
Tacitus?
No, Pletcher won with somebody here, and then didn't, and then trained him up.
Trying to remember the
he absolutely. Well, well, that's interesting.
This will be my third.
This only your third?
Yeah, yeah. Helium was Richard's last one, which was 2021.
This is strange. I could have sworn.
Yeah.
Because Colonial, you said the other day, was going to be your sixth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, because I did Monmouth with Colonial the first year.
Okay.
And then I did Grants Pass in the pandemic year, and then I got this job here that next year. But I didn't start till the fall of 21.
Okay, yeah. I would have thought I would have taken the over. I for whatever reason. I mean,
what was weird is I got the job about 6 months before I started, because I got the job in May. They announced it on my birthday. It was May of 2021, but I didn't really start till I did the two summer days, but I didn't really start till 6 months later, November. So there was a long build up.
I absolutely would have thought it was destined.
Oh yeah, yeah,
Destin. That right?
Destin.
that he did not. Simply trained up.
Gotcha.
Seven weeks, right?
Won the Breeders' Cup Marathon though, right?
And got beat like this in the got beat
Belmont.
In the
yeah,
Belmont.
That's right.
It killed me. It was horrific. I got a picture of those guys. Randy Goulart and it was Goulart, Steve Marshall and Aaron Wellman,
because Destin was Eclipse, right?
Yeah. Somehow they were smiling. I can tell you officially, Drip will not enter, and they're gonna actually.
I feel better. I don't want to be in the news breaking business.
Well,
so it's like
You asked. I am in the news breaking business.
Yeah, okay, good.
And over the years, no Drip.
Which is a bummer.
It is, because he's exciting.
Yeah.
They're going to take their time a little bit with him. They're not going to press forward right now. They're, in fact, if they don't mind, they're going to back off and work later in the spring and summer season. So it appears that Drip will not push for a Derby opportunity.
Well, there's still plenty of Derby opportunities of other Derbies, right?
I mean,
if you get a good three-year-old, I always think of those West Virginia, like Brad Cox has done that a few times, where we'll have horses that'll go rattle off the Ohio Derby or the West Virginia Derby or the Oklahoma Derby, and it's like, you look at the end of the year, the horse made $700,000 or something. Yeah, I mean, Derby, all of them. Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite games at this time of year is trying to figure out which of the Asmussen runners will be the West Virginia Derby
horse. Yeah, yeah. His Red Route one.
I used to call it the Zeniero. Because you know, early on in like December, January, February, they're like a deck of cards, and you don't know which one is going to is going to
emerge. That'd be a good game, was this an Asmussen horse or not? And just start naming them. 50-50 chance, right? Beamy Award was an Asmussen horse.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
What's happened to Beamy Award?
He's a trail horse in Tennessee. Yeah. He got claimed, and then he got claimed again. And then Jason Barkley claimed him last, and I don't think ever ran him, or maybe ran him once, and he said he just wasn't really loving life as a racehorse, and so they sold him. He's a trail horse in Tennessee. Like his namesake, he likes to walk.
Well, the naming of horses is fraught. It's when you name them after someone, you're taking a shot.
Yeah, I interviewed Rich Averill on my show a couple weeks ago, and he was saying, our Harper Rose is his daughter.
Yeah,
and I had asked him. I said, have you ever named one like after? Because I was told like you don't name it after somebody important to you unless you're pretty sure it's going to be a star.
Exactly.
And he was like, oh yeah. He started talking, telling one of the stories of it. But, the one they named after Miramati was like $1 million, Zidane horse or something. And,
it's just not, it's not working.
Yeah, but, Cripe Boss was a Baffert horse, I think. Pegram,
he was solid.
Yeah, he was all right.
He was solid. Joe Bessiger named one for me, which was nice.
Yeah.
And he's won three times. He just, kind of.
Yeah, Beamy Award won twice. Like, I'm like. You know what? That's That's further than a lot of horses ever get. He won a maiden special at Oaklawn, and he beat Brad Cox.
I tried to name one after my grandmother, Mrs. Mayflower, which was her nickname at the bakery and around Great Neck. And she ended up being a terrific polo pony.
Oh, there you go. I was explaining to somebody the other day, a friend who's not involved in racing, she's like, what do they do when they're done retiring? I was like, let me tell you the list of careers that they, exactly. And, things you wouldn't think about. And it's actually a really neat part of the sport. Is kind of hearing and seeing those stories. And, I certainly would love to, kind of look up where Beamer was. I mean, the first horse we ever owned was a horse named Eduardo. And my uncle wanted to name the horse Ed. He thought that would be real hilarious to just have a horse named Ed. And the jockey club wouldn't do it. So I go, they wouldn't accept Ed as a name. It was already taken, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And so I go, what do you... from us, and he went through the claiming ladder 100 times, but it'd be cool to know where Eduardo would have been 20 something by now, so not sure, but yeah. Shout out Eduardo. $6,000 at the Washington sale. I'm actually going to go to the Ocala sale for the first time this week. Tuesday.
I'll see you there. We'll be broadcasting 9 to noon.
Oh, there you go.
First 3 days.
All right.
And then on to Vegas.
Oh yeah, the NHC's next
week.
I talked, Grunder was out for Sam Davis Day, and I always joke, I would love to have him come out on that first day, the first race, and go, welcome to the horse players at the National Handicapping, I associate that, because he was always the first one that they would play in there, in the room, and I used to love hearing him that. I wish he would come out and do that.
What's he doing? He's just
hanging out. Yeah. He goes fishing a lot. He travels a lot. He always comes out for the big days. He comes out Sam Davis and Tampa Derby Day,
nice.
Which is funny. I remember thinking, I was like, why wouldn't you want to come out on like a Wednesday when you can kind of hang out and if there's no crowd? But no, he's seen enough 5,000 claimers in his life, so he wants to see the good ones. he's the best though. He's just such a sweet guy, and everybody kind of lights up when he comes back, which is really really cool.
I've said forever. A lot of people, he was their favorite because he was so folksy and fun. His call in that street sense.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Tampa Bay Derby.
Any given Saturday, right?
Any given Saturday. Yeah. I was here. It was my first one. It was my first day here ever.
Okay.
And actually, you know what? I should maybe check that because we did come here. Did we run Kicking and Screaming? I think we ran Kicking and Screaming here.
Okay.
Rosemary Hellmeister Jr.
Jr. Rosemary Hellmeister Jr. It's so funny. There are certain names that I only hear in his voice. They come into the gate and it's just hard to not go, Baron Horseman, Mr. Antonio Gallardo. but that's the same. I still hear James McElhaney and those guys at Woodbine's voice and Dan Loisel's voice. Jim McElhaney, they're at the post. And there's just certain names you associate with certain voices,
Yeah, it's the landscape, the race calling landscape has been some morphing,
there was Keith Jones and John Curran and Durkin and all those guys kind of retired in a little 4 or 5 year window,
yes.
And so there was kind of no choice but there to kind of be the shift. And there's what's been nice is there's actually been a couple of new voices and faces and younger, kids kind of get into it. Because when I first broke in, I would get emails all the time from people like, I want to be an announcer. How do I do it? And now you just don't. There's literally just a couple. And so, I think it's good that we're getting a little bit of turnover in terms of some younger folks doing it just because, it is good to have fresh voices and new folks. And it's nice seeing, my peers get to call, I'm friends with all the guys that call all the big races, which is neat to see, I broke out. Travis and I started a week apart or 2 weeks apart. And so it's really cool to, he gets to call the Kentucky Derby every year. It's neat
there. And there's also been some shifting, into some, I won't say more high profile, roles. But Tony Kello, at Turfway, is getting exposed to a wider audience.
Oh, 100%. Which is funny because, I grew up with him as one of – because I was a West Coast guy, and he was at Northern Cal for years. And so – and I went and saw him at Finger Lakes this past fall, and it was shortly before they announced the Turfway thing. And so it was really cool because, it's it's not easy to kind of make a go of this if you don't have year-round or close to year-round work. And especially as we've gone from 5-day weeks to 4-day weeks to 3-day weeks, you know, we're paid per day. And so it's you know, and like you said, he's been there at Finger Lakes, God, since, oh, I mean, when did Ross stop? Like 06 or something, 07?
You know what? I would have misguessed that, yeah. But I guess so.
And so, no, I think it's been really cool for Tony to get that gig. And you can, I think you can tell there's just a little more pep in his step in the call, which is awesome to hear. Like, you know, and I was talking to Peter Berube, our GM, about that recently. Just like when you work somewhere year round, it's real hard to kind of keep that freshness about and the intensity. And you know, I notice a lot of friends who work at year round tracks, like their passion gets sapped a little bit, I think, because it becomes a job instead of like something that's really fun. And so like I have the perfect schedule. I have 2 months after this and 2 months after Colonial of a break. I never feel burned out about race calling. At least I haven't till, you know, no, the last several years.
Well, and that same problem is true of the horsemen,
yeah, yeah,
and of the horse players.
But you got to make a living, you know.
I mean, you do.
I take a vacation after Colonial every year. I shut off Twitter. I've never seen a race at Kentucky Downs legitimately in the last like 5 years. And I think you have to take breaks. And as horse players, I mean, obviously it feels counterintuitive, especially like my podcast is PR, right? Like I'm promoting Twin Spires and this and that. But I tell them, I was like, you need to take breaks. Because, you know, you just, it's so easy to get burned out. And when you get burned out, I think you stop doing the actual work that maybe can give you some kind of an edge. And so.
Well, you've been holding the edge for an extended period. And your health, obviously, is excellent.
Better, yeah.
Yeah, well, what you've done is really admirable, and plus you encourage others, and
yeah,
you know, you've got such a great attitude, and you know, are just an absolute asset to the whole, you know, to the whole game and the environment.
Well, I appreciate that. It's very kind of you to say.
Not at all. My pleasure. Jason Beam, everybody. Beamy Award. And
we'll do it again in a few months up in Virginia, right?
Colonial, exactly right. Well, then you can stop by at Ocala.
Well, I'm going to introduce Beamy Bloodstock on Tuesday. So we'll, big future. Basically, I'm just going to try to get rich people to give me money, and I take 10% of it. That's how you be a Bloodstock agent, right?
Yes.
Oh, there's like 50 of them out there. They're so mad I said that.
No, that's okay. They all got into it the same way too.
I told Gary Fenton. I said, Gary, give me some of that little red feather money. I'll spend it wise.
We'll be watching.
Athletes, not pedigree. That's my that's my angle.
Jason Beam, everybody.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Jace. Let's take our only break. We got to come back. We're gonna go to Turfway.